Hi everyone, thanks for joining me on the podcast today. I had the pleasure of speaking with founder and CEO of Airlocker Training, Roman Brady. In the episode today, we go through how Airlocker Training all started, the processes and the passion and what drives Roman to make this one of the biggest brands in the world. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Thanks for joining us on the Brendan Osborne podcast.
Yeah. Because we did it during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And when COVID finished, there was just too much that we had to do. The podcast kind of took a back step.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just too much day-to-day activity to do.
Yep.
But I love doing these things. They're great. They're fantastic. And also when you invite someone else to start talking about their journey and go deep with that,
you lose
sight of what you're doing, and it's a really good connection. And you get so much out of it personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you connect with that person, like you and I will have a good conversation. It's connected for life now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's good. It's great like that.
Yeah. It's good. And so what was your podcast on?
Airlocker.
Airlocker, just...
Because we wanted to educate a market about what we were doing and why we were doing it.
Yeah.
So we would have conversations with our members, potential partners, and we would go into their stories and why they were going to Airlocker, what they felt about altitude training, a little bit about the science, a little bit about the community aspect to it. So our listeners would get a good gauge about what we did, how we did, and why we're doing it.
Yep.
You know, that was the purpose of it. And also it's a good kind of library to have. If I want to invest and buy a franchise, I've got an access to, I think we did eight podcasts that cover the brand over different aspects.
Yep.
It kind of was like a lead sales tool as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
So for you, where does that, like, obviously you can set up a fitness business, you can set up any business, but where does that come from with you to just have your passion as the ultimate driver into that?
The whole journey with Airlocker has been an organic one. It was something that I started, the thought process started after a 7 or 8 year career in logistics and mining, had some success, early success. That was on the back of a rundown football career where I had 4 knee reconstructions before I was 20. A lot of promise in that. Didn't know really what I wanted to do. Did the uni thing and then went into work. Being in Newcastle at that stage, started in mining because that's everywhere I looked around, that's the way to go, you know, get into mining, make a career, get good coin, have kids, retire, go into portfolio of housing and things like that. So that was the thought process after uni. But I'd always trained, and really training got me back to any time I lost myself, where a younger 20-year-old would go party too much, I would get back on track by training. You know, I'd put myself on a diet or a training schedule, and that got me back in a good routine. So I'd feel good about myself. So it was always consistently that thing that I would go back to if I was losing myself.
Sure.
So it was always in my life. And then my lifestyle changed, where it wasn't partying anymore, but it was full-on work, you know. Yep. And so that anchored me in on the day, because otherwise you got too stressed out. It was too much going on with work-wise, work pressures, trying to climb the corporate ladder because I was ambitious. At that stage too, I was doing my uni, I was doing my MBA, or maybe I was doing my engineering stuff then, having my first child, getting married, building my first house, you know, young 20s, did all that really early. And so gym was always the consistent thing that kept me anchored. And then going up the corporate ladder, then starting my own businesses and having a lot of success, overnight you had all this money. And I never had money my whole life. So that was great, but I used it the wrong way.
Yep.
You know, I got involved with environments that weren't serving me and my family at that stage. And so gym was another way to keep that, to go back to something that was consistently making me feel good, and to get me back to where I needed to get to. So it was in my life, my whole life. Doing business, I always felt as a younger kid that I wanted to do something special. And that dream for me was football, you know, rugby league at that stage. And I went into rugby union, Australian schoolboys, was well on my way. And then obviously injury took that away. Yep. So when you lose that blueprint, what I wanted to do with that was give back to these kids that I grew up with, you know, because I grew up in a pretty modest surroundings, and my mum and dad were limited to their experiences. So we didn't really know too much about how the world worked and how to be successful other than play football,
yep.
right? So I wanted to kind of make something of myself so I could go back and give some hope to my family. Like I was the first person to finish high school, first person to go to uni, which isn't like it's a pretty common story, right? But for me in my environment, I wanted to be that person that broke through so I could give belief to my family. So when I got to a point where I lost footy, success for me was business. I fell in love with business.
Yep.
I got involved with the business drive, and I educated myself. I learned. I took myself to an engineering diploma. Then I went to my MBA, and I was completing all this stuff. It was very hard to get through that because financially was hard to pay my way through, and time had no time. I was coaching first grade here in Newcastle as well, doing so much at that time. But I was on this path to be successful.
Yep.
What's success? At that stage, you know, for me it was like I want to be a CEO. Goal was by the time I was 40, I want to be a CEO. So, yeah, you know, and I suppose I was doing all this stuff, and then one thing led to the other, and I was always bettering my best. Like that's one thing I'm proud about my journey is when I turned it on and said, all right, I'm going that way, I went that way. And against all odds, I just kept moving forward and kept learning through a lot of mentors, widened my horizons. And one thing led to another. I started opening up my own businesses. They went really well in logistics and mining. I get to 31. I'm 34 now. I get to 31 and I get appointed the CEO of a major mining company. And that for me was, I've made it.
Yep.
You know, I said by the time I was 40 when I was 25, and I did it by the time I was 21. So this company had a market cap of $2.8 billion, and I'm the CEO. Never had any experience in gold mining, and I'm the CEO of this whole company, right? Reporting directly into the chairman, Kevin Maloney, multi-billionaire. So I'm like, how good's this? I'm doing that for a period of time. I'm away from my family. I've got the best family in the world. My wife's the best person that I know. I love being at home. It's my safe place. It's what fills up my buckets, and I'm never at home.
Yep.
So I'm working all these hours for my family, and I can't even see them.
Yep.
I start breaking down and getting really mentally ill on the plane. I'm spend a lot of time overseas. I'm always over in Western Australia. And I get to a point where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, what... I remember the point. I'm doing all this for my family and my own picture of what success is, and I can't even be around them.
Yep.
This isn't worth it. So I start having the chats to my chairman at that stage and said, look, I need to be back home more. So they set me up in Bondi Junction, and I worked out of Bondi Junction probably 80% of the time. Still not in Newcastle, but it was close enough that I was going home every weekend. By chance, I run into an old mate, and he'd done very well in the health and fitness space.
Yep.
Very well, very well known, and he'd just lost his job. And I said to him over lunch, I said, let me build a business around you, because your face, your marketing, my business background will come up with something phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We'll take over the game.
Yep.
You know, ego-driven still at this stage. That was the start of it. And then the thought process was I could probably put it in Newcastle and it would get me something to be home for.
Yep.
Business is funny too, because if you haven't gone through the process, and I always talk about this lead ball, but if you haven't gone through the process of getting something going and then making it work so you don't have to push it anymore, you've got other people pushing it and you can sit back and just oversee it.
Yep.
It's a process to get anything to that point. So hard to make something work and yep. be successful at it. I'd done that a few times,
yep.
so I knew what it took. This guy didn't know what it took. He had never gone to those depths before.
Yeah, it's quite I wouldn't say easy, but it's definitely a run down the ladder to get yourself to a position where you're generating an income for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and you can absolutely, that's great.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, if you stop, it stops.
100%. So like you said, if you get your business to a point where it's generating your income and you're still in the black on a monthly basis, that's a great achievement. Then it gets to a point where you don't have to be involved and it's still going black, 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 black. That's making it in mm-hmm. business. And that can take years and years and years, depending on the model, mm-hmm. depending on the growth strategy, depending on what you do. Now, when you talk about gyms, I'd never done anything in gyms before. Yep. I didn't know how it worked. One of the things I overlooked was the marketing part of it and social media, how powerful that was. Because we never marketed gold mining or logistics. Yep. You know, it was word of mouth, right? So I kind of went into it, and every bump in the road when you're trying to get your first gym set up and get the concept right and get the team together and get your funding right and brand right, there's so many bits and pieces of that journey that go backward, mm-hmm. you know. And that's fine. But a lot of people that I was involved with at that time just couldn't. They were more so get the brand right, make sure it's going, and I'll come in and help then.
Yep.
You know, they weren't startup guys. So over attrition, these people left the journey. Mm-hmm. And like I've said so many times in this business, I was all in.
Yep.
I was invested financially, emotionally, mentally, but also I had spoken about it a lot yep. to a lot of people I love and trust. So I can't back out now.
Yeah, so you put your feet to the fire.
Mate, it was done. I'd burn all the boat. The boat's burnt.
Yep.
There's no turning back. So
sorry to interrupt. So that's an interesting point, and that's what a lot of people don't realise is like the burning the boats is like the propellant.
Yeah.
Like the conversations is the accountability.
Yep.
And a lot of people, well, I guess that it ties back to your own character, because yep. a lot of people can still have the ability to have the conversations, but then not really follow through on it. So yep. there's a part of your own character that you know, hey, if I start voicing things, which are probably the same characteristics that got you to be a CEO by 31. Yeah.
You're right. And in the health and wellness game, a lot of people talk
mm-hmm.
coming soon.
Yeah.
Launching soon. Mm. And I honestly think we celebrate these launches way too much. We should be celebrating a business that's been going for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, don't go too early and celebrate your success just based on the basis you launched it. Feel good about it.
Yeah.
But you're at the foot of the mountain. Like you're nowhere near done yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say to people, don't get caught up in the euphoria of an idea, because we all love to dream, but that's a massive distraction. And with Airlocker, I dream big, always have dreamed big. But with Airlocker, I knew where I wanted to take the brand, but I knew what I had to do on a daily basis, and I did it. And so every day we're going through these things, and I guess the point I'm making, it started like that. It started on the back of somebody else and me wanting to create a business for that person out of love for them. And then where it turned into was they left the journey. I had, like I said, so to speak, burnt the boat.
Yep.
And I was still
skin in the game.
And skin in the game.
Yeah.
And then it was like, all right, I've got to make this work. Mm-hmm. It got to a point where we opened up our first site in Newcastle, which was over budget. We had equipment in the site that had no relevance to what we do now. The fit out was completely done in a way that no one had a clue what we were doing, right? Mm. The program was it was really unorganized. It was embarrassing, actually. When we opened up, our open day was embarrassing for yep. me. Everyone walks out and goes, oh, how great is this? It's unbelievable. And I'm just like embarrassed, right? So I was on leave from my mining gig at that stage for 3 weeks. I get to week two, a week after we launched, and I had that oh shit moment where this isn't working. What do I do? How do I make this work? Not only did the product stink, we didn't do any pre-sale, so we had no traction in memberships. So we had a month-to-month P&L that was going backward.
It can be a blessing in disguise as well, though, because if you pre-sailed the shit out of it,
yep.
And then your product wasn't right.
Sometimes I like that.
And I don't mind the approach of, like, I think too many people go, like, the order, what you're saying is, like, bazooka first, scalpel second.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, everyone's like, scalpel.
Paralysis by analysis.
And it's too much, but... I think, and then at the same time, it's like, let's just start with something.
Yeah.
Like, just get that rolling.
Well, I've said that so many times. Hindsight's great.
Yeah.
And so what we did was the right thing. We just had a crack. We got it. We got the first product out on the field. And like anything that's great, just turn your words into actions and make it real and then go from there. Like the process of learning is a beautiful process because once you've got something that's there, that's real, you can touch, breathe, feel, taste, hear. Then you can go through a reflection process or a corrective action process or process improvement, and then you can evolve the product live and make immediate changes. And that's what we did. And how we did it, which is what I think makes Airlocker so great, is we did it by asking all of our members or anyone that had anything to do what they would do differently, what they loved.
Yep.
We had no idea. So I think one of our point of differences was the fact that we had no idea. We were open to everyone else's opinion on what would be great in a studio. Everyone else was talking on the behalf of, they had experience in other group training, they had experience in yoga, in different types of health and wellness products.
Yep.
They said, oh, if you did that, that works really well in that product. Or don't do that, because when they do it in that business, it's not really great. So we molded it on the back of everyone. And it was a process of about 2 to 3 months. Prior to that, I left my job. I said to my chairman at that stage, I said, geez, this isn't working. I don't know what to do. And you know, Kevin said to me, mate, there comes a time in a man's life, that's what he said to me, when you've said too much, done too much, to turn back, you've got to make this work. And you can do anything you put your mind to, Rome. And just do a good handover and I'll help you where I can. I remember calling my wife after that and said, game on, we're on. I said, you know, I've just walked away from a dream, a very comfortable lifestyle, but we're in on this. And so we turned the heat on and I rang up a million people, very respectable, proven, tested, successful people in the industry. I even spoke to one of your mates about his experience in the game in Newcastle and what the Newcastle people loved, what they didn't love. I spoke to competitors in the local area, how to make things work. And eventually we got traction. And we got so much traction after 4 or 5 months that I started turning my attention to franchising it.
Yep.
And I suppose when you start out the journey, it's, I want to have a great product. I want to take over the world. So ego-based. But when you start getting into this industry, which has been the most beautiful thing that's happened to me, is what it does to you and your family. It brings real people to you that you're changing their lives for the better. You're connecting people from all walks of life and you're seeing that connection live. You're creating a community of support and love, and all of a sudden all the numbers go out of your mind. Mm-hmm. It's not about the numbers anymore. It's about that feeling you get from what you've done, what you've achieved and what you've created. And then you start getting addicted to the fact that you've got this platform that people are listening to you and doing what you tell them to do in terms of training, and you start using that platform for good. And then I got addicted to getting a bigger platform because I wanted to make a bigger change. Then all of a sudden I started to think, geez, this is why I'm on this earth. Airlocker is why I'm here, because I've always wanted to be successful, to give back, and it's right in front of me now and I'm good at it. It took a while to realize I was good at programming. I was putting a program in place people loved. It just so happened the way you create altitude, they did it, the way they were doing it wasn't efficient, wasn't commercial. But in mining, we were doing it all the time, just in a different application. The same mechanisms that were creating altitude in a room is the same thing we were doing in mining to fill up mining tyres. So we had joined some strategies and some tech and some mechanical engineering nuance together, and we created a product that was 300% cheaper and probably 200% more efficient than anything else on the market. Then it was like, all right, Newcastle's the test dummy, cost a lot of money, made a lot of mistakes, but it was so necessary in the journey because the heartache, the sacrifice that we put into that site, a collective team, not only me and my wife, but also the collective team. If anyone invested in this brand as a franchise, they're coming with that now. You know, that's the support they're going to get.
Yep.
And I've been through the dirt and I've come back out, and so they'll never have to do that again, you know. So all of that heartache was the best thing that happened to this product. The naivety around it, the inexperience, the collective nature of it all, you know, it created a product that, yes, it's gym, yes, it's group training, yes, it's at altitude. But when you walk in the doors at Air Locker, you feel at home, no matter who you are. And that's universal. Everyone says that, it just feels different.
Yep.
And everyone says, well, how do you scale that? Well, that's our job, you know, our purpose, our vision. We've got to keep that strong. And the partners, our selection process has to be very thorough.
Yep.
Onboarding has to have a lot of involvement from us. Because, you know, generally when people buy into the franchise, it takes anywhere from 6 to 12 months before they're operating, right? You know, that includes site selection, legals, you know, and then their fit out pre-sale. So there's enough time there for us to embed the vision and the purpose of what we're doing, plus give them the best product on the market, in my opinion, that they can cascade that cultural difference that we have and also the different product into a new demographic so it can have that standard feel to it.
Yep.
And I know for myself, like, the big purpose here is, you know, we want to create just connection and activity. You know, we want mindful movement, we call it. We want people moving, because I know, you know, for mental health purposes, if I'm active, I feel good. Mm-hmm. And if I'm connected, I'm great. If I'm not moving, if I stop, if I'm not connecting with anyone, I'm not good. So our purpose is just to get people in mindful motion and keep them connected. And that's our purpose.
Yep.
Right? That's what we're trying to achieve with Air Locker. And you know, we're definitely well on our way now. It's been a hectic year, but you know, we're very proud about where the product sits. But that's where it all comes from.
Yep.
Started from there, then all of a sudden you start to build it, and then all of a sudden you're bringing in all this purpose and passion and this childhood dream. It comes into it, and then someone else's dream comes, and then all of a sudden it's bigger than Ben Hur. So
yep.
It started pretty by chance, organically, I suppose, and where it is now, it's huge. Okay.
So early days, when you're first working with the other person,
yeah,
and moving in that direction, was it also altitude training, or was that something that came in part of the process?
No, we had I had an idea which I thought was pretty cool. Looking back on it, I think, geez, we had about four or five different ideas.
Yep.
The altitude, because I suppose we wanted to be different, yep, right?
And that's where I was going. Were you looking at the market,
yeah,
and obviously trying to pick and choose and serve obviously your cause as well, but not model something necessarily,
yeah,
but like seeing the gaps?
Yeah, yeah. Look, there was a product on the market that done hugely successful out of Sydney, global brand now, you know, $1 billion business. And I knew the guys that were involved in that, and nothing but respect for them and what they achieved. Looked at that model and thought, that's the model.
Yep.
That's the model, group training, low entry point costs,
mm-hmm,
and low running costs,
yep,
high revenue, quick ROIs, low break even. So that was the model. No extra fat, no gimmicks,
yep,
just clean, mm-hmm, clean model, you know. But then wanted what happened in the space to be something different, but also be for everyone.
Yep.
And when I first started, the first few ideas were for people like us that wanted to do certain things. You know, it wasn't for everyone. The altitude journey came in because, you know, back in the footy days, a lot of footy players, AFL players, professional athletes, they all used altitude for a performance outcome. But when you actually go into altitude training and a hypoxic therapy, which is basically you sit down, you put a low oxygen mask on and you breathe in that environment for a period of, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. You know, people do that for health purposes, you know, around IBS, Crohn's disease, Alzheimer's. And then you've got breathing techniques like Wim Hof, you know, that's all about oxygen manipulation on cells and stuff like that. So yeah, there was a lot there about it, about low oxygen and what it does to your cells and for performance. So it was pretty attractive. And what you find really quickly is there's nothing out there, nothing in the world that was what we wanted at altitude.
Yep.
And straight away, that was it. That was enough. You know, that's all right. Well, that's the way we're going.
And then once you, all right, you've made this connection, you know that there's a gap in the market.
Yep.
How do you even know that it's a real thing? Like, what process did you do in terms of making that?
It probably goes back to what we said before. The bazooka, the scalp, yeah. So just get one going.
Yep.
You know, just get one out there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't overanalyze it too much, because otherwise you're just in your head too much. You know, just get it out there and see what people think about it.
Yep.
We had enough conversations with people that, you know, every time you talked about someone about the idea, it's like, oh, that'd be awesome.
Yep.
How cool is that? So there was enough there to make us comfortable with it. The costings and the, you know, I pulled together like a P&L, set up cost P&L. It looked like an okay business. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can get 300 members, it was a pretty good business.
Yep.
And we're like, all right, do we back ourselves to get 300 members? Yep. Sweet. All right, well, let's take the risk. Is it worth the risk? Okay, no problem. Can we afford to get the first one up and operational on our own bat, or do we need money? No, we can do it ourselves. Sweet, let's do it. So that were the few things that I suppose that I went through is from a financial point of view, and if I back myself to get the memberships to make it a good business, and off we went. Outside of that, I knew that I was probably a little bit in my own head at that time, because one of my biggest business principles is always to get heaps of feedback from the market. Rather than, because what you love, not everyone else will love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big mistake a lot of people make. But there was nothing that we could kind of test that was out on the market. What I did know is people love group training.
Mm-hmm.
That model worked very well. And there were so many different emergences of different products. And so I knew that if we gave it a little bit of a point of difference and it was something people loved, there was enough behind it that was a unique selling point.
Yep.
And we just had to make it something that was commercial for everyone. And so that was it, really. And that's for the member. And then for the buyer, because, you know, that's what we do. We sell businesses.
Yep. Did you ever consider the whole company-owned route, or was it always franchise?
Well, mate, to be honest, I was so passionate about the franchising route. The funny thing is, actually, I was just having this conversation the other day. Newcastle, our first site, makes me more money than, say, if you just talk purely commercially,
yep.
Take all the emotion away around the purpose. And this, a lot of people don't realise this, but my first site makes me more money than 20 operating franchises will make HQ money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't realise that.
Yeah, that's
a lot of people go 10 franchises. Oh, you're killing it. Yeah. Well, hold on. My one site, which I've got 4 trainers, 1 studio manager, I literally go and have coffees and train with people. That's all my touch points on it, will make me more money than 10 franchises. Mm-hmm. So they will work dollar for effort. You own, company own is the way to go,
yep.
Right? So you got to be very clear on what what you want to achieve in this world.
Yep.
You know, and what you're willing to do to get to that point.
Yep.
Now, franchising is good if you can scale it to 100 operating sites. It's good because you leverage your brand off other people's money.
Yep.
And also, they've got a different network than you.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, speed of scale.
At speed of scale. The idea was always franchising, but it's funny, it's just when you said that, I was actually looking at the numbers the other day and I'm thinking, geez, you know, this one site, I'm going to have 20 franchises operating before I'm even going to get near to Newcastle. But it was always franchising, right? We never ever thought to own more than 3 or 4 company-owned ones. And I suppose the strategy there is Newcastle went well, but doesn't look like we wanted it to look like. So then Bondi was our second site. And that was a really important site because the second site was we got outside of the area.
Yep.
And we learned a lot of stuff. And one of the key things I learned was brand awareness is a big, big thing. And you can't take that lightly, and it doesn't just happen.
Yep.
So when we opened up in Sydney, and to be honest, it was tough because we opened up right in the middle of COVID. So we'd gone through COVID, we got out of COVID, we consciously waited a month to launch because we couldn't do a pre-sale during COVID. It's just the wrong time.
Yep.
Sydney got out of COVID middle of June. We did a month pre-sale. We opened up at the back end of July. When we opened up, there was talk around about going back out of restriction in full classrooms, mm-hmm. right? So for us, that was 36 people per class.
Yep.
We were limited to 20. And then what happened was Melbourne went, 23rd of July. We'd open up just on that. And then there was hotspots in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And so for the Bondi one, even though that made things heaps hard, it made us understand that if you're going to grow this brand outside of your, say, area that you've created brand awareness,
yep.
it costs a lot of money and a lot of time, a lot of dedication to grow that.
Yep.
So then that was like, for us, it was like a key learning because it was like, all right, well, we can't grow this quick and go to Melbourne, Brisbane, because we had all these franchises lined up in Melbourne and Perth, and we're like, geez, we got to really reconsider our strategy here.
Yep.
We need to probably get this to a point where HQ has got recurring revenue to be able to support a growth strategy, or we have to do a capital raise.
Yep.
So that was so key. And the second key thing about Bondi was we had all the new equipment, branded equipment, the finishes, the fit out. And like I've said, as we walked in here, it looks like a dentist.
Yep.
So it's like, geez, this is way too white,
yep.
you know. So we got a designer to come in and say, look, well, you need a little bit more feel to it. So the third site, which is Katara, which is launches soon,
yep.
It looks like that's yep. that's the one, right? We got it right. Probably not right, but definitely
until
we're well.
Seven,
yeah,
eight, nine.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and there's always this learning part. Like, there's always the next learning or the next thing that you have to overcome. But you just keep putting it in your tool belt when you're franchising a business. And the pre-sale strategies, campaigning, we're getting that right for Katara. So that's the next narrative that worked.
Yep.
Open up with 100 members, break even straight off the bat. Then it's the ongoing support. Got to 250, 300 members really, really quickly. And, you know, the business is great. Next narrative. And then the story now has to come from our franchisees. It can't come from us now. I've done enough talking about it and I'll continue to talk about it. But it's all about how successful our partners are. And, you know, we call our franchisees our partners because we feel like that. You know,
it is
like
a partnership.
It is, mate. Yep. It is. And when you look at it, a partnership, a lot of things too. So you've got a legal document that binds you both. If that legal document, if our partner reads that legal document and says, well, hold on, that's a slap in the face. That's not a partnership.
Yep.
So you've got to create your whole supply chain of events so it's a partnership. It's got to be fair. It's got to be reasonable. And if there's disrespect by any party during that pathway, it's not the right relationship or the right partnership. And so we're getting better at all that stuff. You know, it's something that you're learning all the time. But look, we got 10 franchises sold now, 10 territories sold now. I think by the end of this year, we'll have 6 operating or 5. Then next year, 2021, if we get a good hit out of it, we want to have about 40 or so sold and plus, you know, 15 to 20 operating. And I think from at the back of 2021, then we've got a business.
Yep.
At the moment, we're well and truly on a knife's edge, and it's not, you know, until you get to that point, there's too many stories, that too much narrative that has to be proven, concepts have to be proven for it to be a business yet.
Yep.
You know, but we are on the right track, I think.
So when you are trying to replicate and keep this consistency, keep the community, keep the passion throughout, when you have people, obviously you'd have lots of inquiries for partnerships.
Yep.
What are you looking for?
We're looking for people that are caring. When you talk about someone that's caring or cares for themselves, their product, they'll do what's necessary. And that means sometimes have a hard conversation. That means sometimes go out of their comfort zone and bring this product to many, many people out of care. You know, it's not being nice. Nice isn't what I'm talking about. Care is, you've got to start with care. We need caring people.
Yep.
And someone that cares for their people and their members and their community and themselves and the brand is one of the, is the top thing that I'm looking for. It's a new brand. It's taking something completely new to the market. So you need people that are courageous. Courage is another thing. I mean, you got to be nearly silly to invest in this at the moment, because there's nothing like us around.
Yep.
You know, and what that does for me, I'm so humbled by people saying, "Hey, we want to partner up," because that for me is courage. There's nothing like this around, so it's a big risk. Mm-hmm. And if you're courageous, you'll overcome things. You know, you'll overcome your own. You know, we've all got a sense of things holding us back. Our bodies doesn't want us to go out and out of our comfort zones. So we need people that are courageous, and then really we need drive.
Yep.
You know, you need drive. I mean, again, new brand, even if it wasn't new, you need driven people, because that's what this industry needs. You know, when you look at coming in to do a session, you got someone that cares about you and going to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that's good, bad, or indifferent, show their hearts, whatever it is, you need that person. You need someone that's driven to make this business work, driven to get up every day and make a great product for the community. If we can get those three things in all our people, mm-hmm. that's what we're looking for.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, that's quite hard to kind of nail.
Yep.
But they do pop their heads up. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, owner-operator versus investor, you know?
Yeah, and that's where I was going with that as well. Yeah. Like, because you do, like, especially back to the start of the conversation when you're talking about that first stage is when you're in the trenches, you're doing the work, and then obviously you're trying to get people or trying to get yourself to the level where you're pulling away,
yep.
trying to find the right person who isn't in that mindset straight away.
Yep.
Like, it's like, yes, this is your business and our partnership,
yep.
but I need to know that you're still in the trenches mode for versus like that new person that comes in that day one hires a manager that day one is only in there once a week, and then the model just dilutes a bit.
Ideally, you want owner operator.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally you want owner operator. But there are some really good people out there that don't have the means to own an airlocker.
Yep.
Great operators that could pair up with an investor.
Yeah, true.
So one of the prerequisites to becoming a franchisee is if you're not going to be an owner operator, we want to see your studio manager.
You have to screen them too.
I have to screen them too. Mm-hmm. And we won't enter into terms
yep.
until we see that person. So, you know, common questions from going through the process at the moment, oh, well, I wouldn't look at hiring someone until a couple of months out. You know, I haven't even got a site yet. Well, mate, we don't know if that person that's going to be looking after our brand is the right person. Oh, but you guys can help me hire that person. So it's one of those questions that an investor will say, well, hold on, you know, we'll find the right person. I'm like, but we want to see them now.
Yeah.
And we want them to be a part of the onboarding now. So as soon as the franchise documents are done, their name's on the franchise document as your studio manager. And so it's a hard thing for an investor to make work, but I'm comfortable with our HQ strategy around that, because ultimately that person who's running the studio needs to understand what it is to be a part of the Airlocker brand.
Yeah.
And they need to understand the fabric of myself. I've got a business partner and my wife and they've got to understand what it is that we're about.
Yeah.
Because if we get that wrong, it's early days, you can't reverse it.
Yeah.
You know? And it could be the differentiator from this kicking on or not.
Yep.
So, I mean, one of the other mistakes I find that a lot of franchisors make is numbers, you know, get it out. And, geez, if you, you know, you push it too hard too early and you get that wrong selection criteria wrong, or you crack deals that at the Christmas party, everyone's like, well, aren't you, how much did you pay? Oh, I didn't pay that. What? You know,
yep.
It creates a huge amount of issues.
Yep.
And so our advisory board that we speak to is like, look, you've got to be very careful with that. So we've listened but ideally, look, if an investor comes in and says, hey, look, Brendan's going to be running my site, and we're like, geez, what a great guy. Yeah, we're moving forward.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And was there any, like, surprises? I know that you said it, that you've created a model that is for everyone.
Yep.
And open to the, like, your healthy pops.
Yep.
Is there any groups or demographics that you're surprised about that are attracted to this?
Not really.
Yep.
Not really, because before we started, we knew from cradle to grave, this was from a health point of view, not yep. performance, but from a health point of view, this was scientifically proven. Like, you know, one thing, you know, which is really important for people to understand is that where we train for, you know, our sessions go for around about 50 minutes. There's whole communities that live higher than us. So that's babies, pregnant people that are sick, athletes, go to school every day. They live in higher altitude areas than us. So we knew that, and those communities are some of the most healthiest in the world, you know, so much so that so many scientists have gone up there and said, well, what is it about this oxygen level change on the cell that creates this really healthy community? And, you know, there's been some phenomenal work in that space. So we knew that this was great for people.
Yep.
From cradle to grave. And so when we opened up, majority of our members are female. I'd say 65 to 70% are female.
Yep.
But where we probably hit a more demographic than any other gym is we get people from, say, 55 to 75 in our gym.
Yep.
Right, which is quite odd mm-hmm. when you think about group training.
Yeah, intense group training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I built the product like that. So rather than jumping, mm-hmm. I've got a self-propelled kind of all of our cardio to elevate the heart rate. It's all equipment-based.
Yep.
So curved treadmills, rowers, ski ergs, bikes, aerodynes. So there's no the jumping and all that stuff, yep. right? So on your wear and tear, that's minimized. So that invites an older group, broken down footy players like me.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So the way we do our training is less intense. So it may look intense when you see it on social media.
Yep.
But that's because whoever that person is wants to make it intense.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about altitude training is you can do less in terms of mechanical load
yep.
or movement, but still get a better result
yep.
or adaptation on whatever it is you're trying to work. So if it's a fitness goal, you get a better adaptation for less effort.
Yep.
If it's muscle growth, you get a better adaptation for less weight
yep.
that you move, which is better on your joints. Fat loss, a better effort for less output on yep. the rower or treadmill, so you don't have to go as fast. So we knew that we would invite people that were less fit or older or less mobile because our product was catered to it.
Yep.
So having people of, like, we've got people in wheelchairs that come in and train during the session.
Yeah, I actually saw that on one of your posts, I think, yeah. the other day. It yeah. was pretty inspiring, dude.
Mate, we've got people that are literally impaired in legs or arms that come in and train with the group. Because everything we do, you can just cater it around whatever it is you can and can't do, right? But the science behind altitude is the fact that the recovery rates, you know, it's used for recovery as well. So any micro tears during your lifting is immediate repair straight away in a hypoxic environment. So people feel better. You know, their attrition rates are lower because they can back up, back up, back mm-hmm. up. So yeah, I wasn't overly too surprised. I think one market we were hitting that no one else really hits is your trekkers. You know, yep. A lot of trekkers come in and acclimatizing for mountain peaks and long distance runners and people that want to get that kind of oxygen training. So when they're doing their marathon or, you know, cycling riding, they've got that kind of ability to operate on less oxygen. So we get a lot of them as well.
Yep.
And then rehab groups, you know, sports physicians bring people in for rehab in the middle of the day. That's how we got a lot of the members that are in wheelchairs. You know, they're doing their rehab and all of a sudden they're like, let's have a crack at a normal session.
Yep.
You know, and it's cool because you go and when you come to Airlock, it's the only gym you can go and swipe your your card and okay. get a rebate.
Yep.
You know, and so that's up to $500 a year. People can get on coming to a gym membership at Airlocker.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So, you know, we get people like that go to the doctors and we've done a deal with one of the medical centers where the doctors will say, hey, we, you know, you're a bit down or you're a bit overweight, we prescribed you Airlocker.
Yeah, cool.
And so we're building this big content strategy around that. So it's cool like that. We're really proud about the fact that we can hit everyone.
Yep.
As many people, because that's our Airlock training altitude is for everyone. That's our tagline, right? So we're trying to build that product around that tagline.
And what's the typical frequency? So someone's looking at joining Airlocker. Is it like you're recommending several times a week?
Three to four.
And are they picking their style of class?
So the way we do our classes is we split the day in two. So we do a midday setup.
Yep.
So Monday morning will be predominantly a cardio workout, hybrid mix of weights, mix of cardio, mix of boxing. And then Monday afternoon will be strength for legs, which then carries over to Tuesday morning. So you've got your legs in there, strength-based. Then you go into a cardio workout, then into a strength upper body workout, then a cardio workout. Then Friday afternoon is a little block where we'll do either yoga, we'll do breath work, we'll do stretching, or we'll do like a pump class.
Yep.
Yeah, on upper body, lower body. So that just breaks up the week.
Yep.
Depending on the macro cycle. And then the Saturday, Sundays are like the high energy, you're boxing, you've got stuff going everywhere. It's just a huge amount of fun, but a huge amount of blow too, you know.
Yep.
And they're everyone's favorites. But so that's the way we do our block. And because the way we do it, it's all circuit-based, right?
Mm-hmm.
So circuit-based training. We do a 6-week block, training block, and there'll be an upper body focus. So even though you've got legs, cardio, upper body, that macro cycle, when you look at the micro cycle of it all, we might have more of a tinge towards abs 1 week.
Yep.
And a lot of our members don't even pick it up.
Yeah, yep.
But the next week it's more leg-based.
Yep.
So, yeah, you can imagine you've got 30 exercises in the circuit. You've got a base around cardio, but you're filling it up with more legs 1 week and more abs the next week.
So you have a bit of super compensation in each element, each part of the week.
And so it's a lot of variety around it. But, you want people coming 3 to 4 times a week because essentially what altitude training does – why it's so effective is once you get the adaptations of your red blood cells, so you increase red blood cell count, that takes about 10 sessions over 3 weeks.
Yep.
Once it's there, if you consistently come, you always will maintain that red blood cell count.
Yep.
Right? So what that means for the lay term is more red blood cells, more oxygen-carrying blood cell, so then recovery is a lot quicker.
Yep.
So what you do outside becomes more efficient and better.
Yep.
So that adaptation takes about 10 sessions over 3 weeks, and if you can keep that,
yep,
which is kind of like blood doping, right? So it's a good story.
Yep.
So we always say 3 to 4 times a week over 3 weeks, and then you just want to maintain that.
Yep.
But it goes as quickly as it comes too.
Yep.
So yeah, it's up to, and a lot of people hit it just because they love going there. A lot of people hit it 5, 6, 7 times a week. It's crazy, but yeah, generally 3 to 4 times a week.
And what are you guys doing at the moment to really just heighten that community feel?
Well, if you've looked at our social media, we always talk in a way it's about community and love and appreciation. And
yep.
We celebrate our members. We celebrate the community all the time. very seldom where you see like a photo where it's just one face, it's many faces. So we do a lot of stuff on that window to our business.
Yeah.
So when you look at it, you see community. And one of our key strategies is you've got the workout space, and the way that we structure our set, our fit outs, is there's a waiting area, right? Because you've got to separate the inside and outside air.
Yep.
So people wait in a waiting area for the other class to finish, and then they transition through. We've got strategies built around how to create the community in that space, that foyer, that waiting room.
Yep.
Because that really is when you're having conversations. Because when you're in the space, you're too tired, you can't really talk. But you want to build that community by just having people ask the question, how are you, get to know them, really simple stuff.
Yep.
But then you want to build connections with the members, you know, as well. So we do stuff like that, and yeah, we're heavily involved with community charities. So we're always, any opportunity we've got to give back in that sense and get the brand involved, maybe do a giveaway, get behind a brand, you know, a foundation, we're always involved. You know, it's hard with COVID at the moment because then you do social stuff as well.
Yep.
I mean, there's so much to be said about that, because when you talk about a community, you talk about a club. It's, yeah, you go there to work out, but it's like a footy club or a sporting club. You do functions, you know, and so with COVID, that's been really hard, right?
Yep.
And then we also do a Power of Me challenge, which is essentially mind, body and soul, and we get guest speakers to come in and do chats to our members about mindset, about, you know, their own success, their own stories,
yep,
nutrition plans, support, training plans, support,
yep,
and try to educate them, you know, educate them, motivate them, support them.
Yep.
And, you know, so there's some of the things we do to try to create that community and sense of belonging. And it works really well. And really that's the point of difference of any community place is – you've got to get people interacting outside of the gym.
100%. Yeah, so it is. It's always, especially in the fitness business, it's developing that, just that core community with, like you said, that sense of belonging. You never can hit that stupid high percentage of people, everyone staying. There's engaged. Always going to be people that go along, sure. But as long as you're building your own pool along the way, which sounds like it comes a lot from your own experiences and background.
Well, mate, the other thing too is you – the product in itself, you got to make it so it's attractive for people to consistently come to stop churn. So that's where your variety in your workout comes in. You know, you got to have a bit of everything, and it's got to somehow make sense. And I think our program is something that keeps people as well.
Yep.
You know, and so it doesn't get boring. There's always, it spices up. But yeah, you're right. It's hard. You can't always stop the churn. But the hard thing for us that we've found is COVID, because it's taken out a lot of that social element.
Yep. In terms of the social, obviously, in reality, and then the sharing.
Well, mate, we could have had a function on the back end of, I don't know, Easter.
Yep.
You know, come in and put a do on it. You know, the surf house or something.
Yep.
You know, and get people talking outside the gym.
Yep.
You know, it could have had an activation on the beach.
Yep.
You know, stuff like that. Or we could have done bigger group stuff or an awards night for at the end of the challenge.
You know,
there's a lot of stuff you could have done, but anyway.
It would be good if there was a lot more talk in terms of mainstream media from a health perspective about COVID and the importance of it. So we're viewing this, but it's that catch 22 where they're restricting some of the fitness industry, but everyone knowing that they need to be healthy to lower your risk and lower, if you did ever have COVID, your ability to recover from it. But they're restricting that, not promoting the health side.
Mate, it's all scare tactics. You open up your news, it's like hotspot, spreading wild, three cases. So the first line is spreading in Sydney Southwest, three cases. You know what I mean? Like they hit you hard.
Yeah.
The death virus I seen the other day. Jesus.
Yeah.
Look, head down, bum up on that one. It's we're grateful to be open and operating, and Melbourne's obviously going through some tough times.
Yeah, they're struggling.
It's like anything. You get dealt a hand, and you got to use it the best you can, and that's it. You know, that's it. And what I can't control is how people in the news talk about it. But you know, we can come around our members and support them, and we can do what we can to make sure our site's safe, and we're doing that. So
yep,
that's what we think about COVID.
So in your earlier days, we'll backpedal a little bit, like when you were learning a lot about business, was that through university, or were you out paying attention? Were you reading books?
So I got addicted to learning, which is a good point.
Yep.
Once I had set my intention that I wanted to be, I wanted to go down that business route and become a CEO, which is funny because it's a big dream back then. I suppose the first dream is I wanted to make 80 grand a year, have a car and go home with a suitcase and hear my daughter call my name out when I got home. That was my first. Even take a step back from that, when I was a labourer, I wanted to get out of my high-vis stuff so I could wear a watch and a nice button-up shirt and have a company car. But I got to a point where having my first – when I had Noah, my eldest son, that was 8 years ago, we – like it was a struggle, man, back against the war – and so my wife struggled breastfeeding, and she went through some really tough times, and Noah never slept, he didn't eat, he wasn't a great baby. And so Carmen went through, females full stop, you know, they're all superwoman. But it was tough. So what we did, we split the night. So we split the night. At this stage, I wasn't doing anything in terms of learning, right? But we split the night where she'd go to bed at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m., when she kind of gave up the breastfeeding. Because in females' head, they think they have to breastfeed, right? Because you're a woman, if you can't do it, you're a failure. That's, some people think that way. That's how Carmen felt. She put so much pressure on herself to the point where she was in hospital for a week.
Yeah.
And then when she came out, we weren't on the bottle, So... that was good because we could split the night. I would take Noah from 6 to 1 a.m. So that gave Calm 7 hours sleep. And for those people that have been through parenting, that's gold. And so I would go to bed at 1 and I would wake up at 6:30 and go to work.
Yep.
Over a period of, we did that for 3 months. So what do you do at night when Noah's probably asleep but you're trying to, all I did was educate myself. I watched Tony Robbins, you know, Les Brown. Yep. I never watched his stuff. I got addicted to it. It's like, this is the stuff.
Yeah, Les Brown's got some
unbelievable stuff.
Words together, cool.
Dwayne Dyer, Robin Sharman, all these people. And then I was like, bought my first book. Yeah.
What was your first book?
I bought my first book, and it was by Org Bindo, The Greatest Salesperson That Ever Lived. And it was a book that thick. It was good because it was small.
Yep.
I was like, crack a book. I read that book probably 5 or 6 times.
Is that the one where you have to, where it tells you to read it over and over and over?
Yeah. 10 scrolls. And it was unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So then I read another book, and I was watching all this stuff. So I started enjoying staying up at night. But I took myself from not really knowing too much about self-improvement and business and stuff to a point where I was reading stuff on Jack Welch, who's GE CEO, Bill Gates and his book, and Warren Buffett about investment. And I was just engaged with all these other people and just started thinking about it. And then you start to get into the crux of all those people, and they've got rituals.
Yep.
It's like burn the midnight oil. You make your money from 9 to 5 and then from, you know, up into midnight. That's what everyone's not doing. And so...
yep.
Yeah, I started developing these addictions to learning and reading books and watching audio stuff, and then you try to translate it in your life, you know. Yeah. You try to do those things in your business or whatever I was doing. Yeah. And at that time, I was on the floor. I was a labourer.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, I got to get a better job.
Yeah.
You know, I got to get something I can use this stuff.
Yep.
I remember I got into Deepak Chopra, and it was the first spiritual guy that I listened to, and he had the 7 laws of success. Spiritual laws of success. And man, I would have that in my ears all the time, working out. You know, it's a funny thing, and when you reached out the other day, so I used to train at Jets and you used to train there.
Yeah.
And I used to listen, that was the time one of the times I was listening to that stuff and you used to train there, you were like ripped up, bulky, and Jarrett was there, right?
Yeah, yep.
So that's when you reached out. I was like, I know this dude. And I'm like, yeah, he used to train at Jets and he was, you know, ripped up. I remember looking at you going, fuck, that's the body there. But that period of my time, of my life, which, geez, that would have been 8-9 years ago, mm-hmm. I was listening to all that spiritual stuff then. And I thought, geez, I've got the secret here.
Yeah, yep.
I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, the law of less effort, law of giving and receiving and all this stuff. I'm like, man, I've got a leg up here.
Yeah.
I need to get a better job so I can use this stuff. And I suppose when you start thinking on a higher level and you start churning and vibrating a higher energy, things happen to you.
Yep.
You start asking a lot of questions and people start coming to you, start teaching you.
Yep.
You're leveraging off their networks.
Yep.
They're loving seeing this young, ambitious, driven person that's not too arrogant. There's a little bit of elements of themselves they see in you, and they go, you know what? He's on his way. I'm going to help him out. And that's what happened to me. I got so many good people around me at that time, mentors, that just seeing how much effort I was putting into having a kid, then I was doing stuff. Like, I was putting myself through uni. I wasn't sitting going, oh, how do I do it? And then not actually acting on it.
Yeah, and that's what they would have been respecting.
100%.
They're seeing the outcomes.
And you know, I was coaching. I was giving back to community. I was working. I was having a family. I was buying a house. You know, I was putting myself into it and backing myself. And so that's how it all started. And I reckon I was vibrating my highest energy.
Yep.
Because it was a really innocent one.
Yep.
And regardless of having any answers or not much answers, I just kept going, not knowing if that was the right way.
Yep.
So I started to reflect every day, write journals. I started because, you know, that's what these CEOs were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you journal? All right, Google that. That's how you journal. All right, you got to start with the event and then you got to assess it back, or what would you do differently? What's it tied to in your past? Mm-hmm. All right. Geez, that takes like an hour and a half every night. Nah, that's what you got to do, Ron. You got to do it.
Yep.
Then I started to get involved with my engineering study, and then I did my MBA, and I couldn't read properly. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't get through books, so I did a speed reading course.
Yep.
You know, and I went from something like 70-something words in 60 minutes to something like 500 words in 60 minutes, and my comprehension was up by 30-40%.
Yep.
Like, it was crazy. Like, this stuff works. If anyone wants to do a speed reading course, it works. So it was just this, I need to be better at that. And then I start thinking about, and that movie, Limitless, wasn't out yet, but I'm thinking, where's the pill I can take?
I want the next
one. That level. I can just remember everything. Yep. I need that pill.
I've done that path many times. I'm looking at Jim Quick stuff.
Yeah. So I'm like, I need that stuff. Even if it was a placebo. So I got onto an organic thing. I was doing that. And, you know, then you fast forward. And really, it's just that.
Yep.
That's how it all happened for me. Regardless of what businesses I started and how good they went or not good, or what jobs I got from that point forward, it was inevitable.
Mm.
It was that doing that every day,
yep,
consistently, that got me to that point. Now, if I would have had my time again, I probably wouldn't have gone as hard.
Yep.
Because what I've learned in life, especially in business and success and also balance, because if you get a balanced human being,
yep,
generally, that's who I admire now. Someone that's got the family down pat, that works, always happy.
Mm.
That's what I look at. Someone's really balanced. And if you're out of whack, if you're out of balance, you're not consistent. And what I learned about my life is I went way too hard early. I went way too hard. What I learned now is if I can hit a level that doesn't burn me in every other area, so I'm in balance, but I do it every day, eventually whatever I want will come.
Yep.
And so that's what I've learned differently from the start. But going back to that, it was game over. All I had to do was keep doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stuff that's happened in my life it's not been by chance. It's not by good luck. I just did the work.
Yep.
You know, and I started with where everyone should start in business if they're new to it. Look up to someone.
Yep.
Ask questions of someone that's been there, done that, and done it in the right way,
yep,
ethically, and just have a look at what they do on a daily basis and replicate it.
Yeah.
And do it long enough and eventually you'll create whatever it is you want to create.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a couple of gold things in that. And one being that it's the chicken and the egg with the imbalance balance, because like really you can't balance anything unless you have something greater to work with, yep, which tends to come from being imbalanced.
Yep.
And that's a big blocker, I think, in a lot of people in learning these days, is they're trying to go straight to the balance and they've got no character development and making all the mistakes. So you can't, like, even though in reflection you'd be like, I wish I didn't work too hard, but it's like, no, I ended up being who I am. The person who has the ability to reflect back.
Yeah, you're probably right. Look, I don't regret anything.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things I would change if I could.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I did that I didn't have to do out of being losing my way a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and what happens is when you operate, like what happened to me anyway, is I would do 100-hour weeks of consistent work, and I would rave about that.
Mm.
You know, it was proving myself a point, and then just it was like an ego thing.
It's a
badge of honor for me. And then all of a sudden, I'd have a crash.
Yeah,
and that would involve, at the time when I had money, would involve party and this and that and the other, right?
Mm.
So then you're gone.
Mm.
You know, you've lost all your momentum.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah,
I could have done without the crashes.
Yeah,
you know, and so. If I just would have hit a high level and been more happy with myself about that level, I know I wouldn't have had the crashes.
Yeah.
Which, but like you say, when you get smashed by a train, generally you learn the most, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean?
And then, like, if you don't have the crashes, you don't have the wisdom.
Yeah.
If your kids or if anyone's going through any of their own troubles, you're not pulling from anything.
Yeah.
You're pulling wisdom from experience.
I've got a question for you, actually, because you bring up a good point. If you are the person you are because of all the crashes, do you teach your kids to learn from your lessons, or you let them have their own crashes?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because that's it, like...
what do you do?
Yeah, and that seems to be the thing. It's like all the interesting people come from these ups and downs and like had bad times or going into parenthood early and all these sort of extreme things, but like they're the things that you're trying to get your kids not to do.
It's hard.
It's so that's the catch-22. It's like, the partying wasn't good for me, but I met some cool people I knew not.
Yeah, well, it was just coming out of that, right?
Yeah.
And you go, geez, that didn't work for me.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm about. That's not who I want to be around.
Yeah.
You know, you're feeling it, you're living through it, and you make the adjustment.
Yeah, and it's just dipping the toe in the water of all the versions of yourself that you're not.
100%.
And then you identify quickly. The other really cool thing that you said, and I think people skim over that a little bit too much, is like having a really emotive image of the future that can encapsulate a whole sequence of goals. So like this, almost this meta vision. Like, so you had this sequence of, or this vision. It's like, all right, I picture myself wearing a suit, carrying a briefcase, having a car. And like people can just skim over that.
Mm.
But then if you reverse engineer that, all right, what type of jobs require that? What type of job, because then you go deeper into the vision. Am I coming home at 10 o'clock at night? Am I coming home at daytime? What jobs would allow me to arrive home to see my child before they're in bed?
You know what? You want to know my vision now that I've got?
Absolutely.
I've got two visions and related to business.
Yep.
My first one's more of a family-based one. I've got this vision that it's a Christmas or something like that, and this juggernaut that's Air Locker, it's got beautiful people, and some of our partners go, hey, here's something we want you and Carmen to watch this in Christmas, and we put this our gift to you from the group, you know. We put this thing on, and there's these sites of Air Locker all around the world with like these people that are so happy and as owners and members and thanking us for creating this brand that they've got so much out of, and just sitting back with Carmen having a red wine with our kids. Noah's probably the CEO that time, whatever. And we're just like, look what we've done.
We're here.
Like, it's everywhere. Like,
yeah.
That would be cracker.
And that what you did just there, and a lot of people wouldn't pick up, that breath.
Yeah.
Is like, because that's that permission slip, and that shows into your work ethic as well. It's like, I'm going to take a breath then.
Oh, wouldn't that be, that's where Oh, geez, that would be great. And then the second one I have for Air Locker, I've got a vision of our A. So if you know our brand, there's an A with a little mountain in it. Yep. It's a blue one. With MJ, Michael Jordan, on top of that A, and he's the majority share partner in Air Locker.
That's right? Cool.
And there's this thing with MJ over the A just saying, train like the best.
Yeah.
That's when you made it. And so, because I love that guy.
Yeah.
And so when I came up with the name, Altitude,
yep.
Who's better in the air than him?
Yep. That's wicked.
So I was like, you know, air, something. It was always air, like Nike Air, you know, Air Jordan. Because I was like, wanted to be the best, you know, I want to be. And what he represents is not just, he was not just the best in his era, probably of all time, but how he adapted his game and himself to be more team and more, he was all about the community in Chicago and you know, everything that he was is I wanted that brand to be about.
Yep.
You know, someone that wins, someone's courageous, caring, driven, someone that, you know, does what it takes to keep it going.
Yep.
And I always had this vision of Air Jordan's symbol on top of that A and just thinking one day when this has got enough traction, you know, Air 48.5 have Mark Wahlberg, but Air Locker one day will have Air Jordan and it'll just be a cracker. Just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
how
awesome,
good
would
that be? And that's why we came up with the name. It was like, all right, well, you know, what are we going to call this thing? And, you know, I wanted a simple brand, but, yeah, I wanted it to be around about his characteristics and how he took on that amount, you know, and how he is now. Like, look at him now, you know, $2.8 billion worth. He doesn't stop. Smart. He's inquisitive. He's, you know, that.
Yeah.
Did you see The Last Dance?
Yeah, yeah, man.
Come on, man. I've watched that a million times. And it came out as Air Locker's going. And I'm what? So anyway, but that's the other vision I have.
And they're cool. And that's what, like, people can take so much away from. It's like, you can have all these, I guess, goals around house and family and savings and all that. And a lot of that, yes, creating security is important.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, your life is your life, and it's about, all right, what cool experience would I like to have?
Yeah.
And ultimately that's the biggest driver. It's like, yes, tick all the boxes, raise your kids, do your security, make the most amazing relationship, but then there's more.
Yeah.
Like, there can't just be you just going through the day ticking those boxes. Yeah. It's like the experiences like that is what, like, you can see how much it makes you who you are.
Mate, live.
Yep.
You know, live.
Yep.
Like, don't just see things or don't just look at things. Let them sink into you. Like, let this experience we're having now fill you up.
Yep.
Like, don't just come in here and do a podcast and leave and go on. Like, think about, be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And live your life. Whatever that means, live it.
Yeah.
Have a crack, you know, like, experience things. Connect with people.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk to the heart than the head any day. And I think one of the major things about life, I guess, for people is a lot of people – see, my brother committed suicide, and that was a massive thing for our family. My mum and dad are still distraught about that. And when you look at his life and then you look at my life, so I'm 34 now. He committed suicide at 33. So he's in the prime of his time. But the way I look at life now, and I have for some time, I think we're – being so close to a family members that's committed suicide, and I've had mates as well, I think to myself, well, what went wrong there, you know, and what happened to get them to that point? And I always think to myself in terms of my life and their life and my brother's life, and I always think, when you don't see the beauty in it all, for whatever reason, somehow you put up blinkers on, or sometimes you... whatever happens, somehow you close yourself off to so many things that are beautiful, right? And you focus on things that may not be great. Mm-hmm. And your attention goes on to X, Y, Z.
Yep.
Now, situationally, things happen to you that are out of your control.
Of course.
But that doesn't mean that it's all over. It doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to live a great life.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you look at it.
Yep.
It's how you look at it. So you got to get your mindset. You got to look the right way.
Yep.
You can't look at things with a negative or a dark tone to them.
Yep.
And what happens is, what I found going back to what you were saying in terms of have the kids and that and tick the boxes, and is you could do all that stuff. I'll give you a good example. You could be at a table with your kids and your wife, or your kids and your partner, whatever, and you can have dinner, and you could not engage.
Yep.
And walk off that table like nothing happened, and sit down on the lounge, and you got your best mate, your wife or your partner there, and don't engage. Yep. And go to bed. That 4-hour period, you could change it. You could sit at the table, talk to kids, say, what are you grateful for? Like, as the adult, pierce yep. through the layer,
yep.
cut through to the heart, mm-hmm. be fun, mm-hmm. energetic,
yep.
have a laugh, create an experience, grab them, give them a kiss, sit down on the lounge, talk to your wife in a, I don't know if you want to get sexual, anyway, like whatever, have a connection,
yep.
have fire, and then go to bed.
Yeah.
Same amount of time, same setting, same people, different experience.
Yeah.
It's how you live your life. It's what you do in the seconds that you have to make yourself happy. You own it.
Yep.
You own that environment. Whatever platform you've got, make the most of it.
Yep.
And don't focus on stuff you can't control or stuff that doesn't serve you. Just don't focus on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And no matter where you find yourself in life or situations, just go back to that. Yep. Go back to, I can make this, I can always play my fight back. If something happened to me that I'm not liking, my business partner, Mark Hughes, right? So Hughes a great example of that. Brain cancer 7 years ago now, size of a bloody melon,
mm-hmm.
right? Healthy start of the week, surgery end of week.
Yeah.
High grade brain cancer. No one's ever survived it. Wakes up bit dazed after a week. What's he do? All right, well, what are we gonna do? Well, I wanna start up a foundation to give my life purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
Yep, straight up.
And then he sunk his time into that. It gave him purpose. And, 7 years on, he's now, he's our my partner in Airlocker, because that's what we're about. Like, live your life.
Yep.
He can't control that, but his fight back he can control.
Yeah.
And, like, he's had such a great impact since doing it. And that's what I'd say about for people, that live your life.
Mm.
Live it. Like live yeah. every second of it, and get inspired daily. Like somehow be around people that bring the best out of you. Do stuff that lights you up.
Yep.
And then regardless of what you achieve or don't achieve or what you don't have or have, at the end of the day, you're still happy.
Yeah, and it's not about the thing. It's about how that person is experiencing the thing. So a lot of people would see yourself, you have all this stuff going on, you have all these amazing connections, yep. and you have the fam and all that, and then they are different circumstances and they can't connect with it. So that disconnect is like, oh yeah, cool. I've seen other people killing it in life. And that goes into it. But what they need to realize is that what you're saying is, one, it's about work. Like, this stuff doesn't just all come to you.
Yeah.
Like Mark Hughes doesn't come into your life if you don't do all the work.
That's right, yeah.
And then also on that like seeing the importance of thinking negatively, obviously, barring full mental illnesses and many things, but in terms of just the day-to-day people that are in bad spots, that their thinking is a habit. Like, and they're not aware that
100%.
They're not aware that I'm in a negative headspace because I'm just in the habit of thinking negatively. So when they are sitting with and there's cool parallels to exercise with this actually. So when they are sitting at the table with their children, it's actually going to be hard for them to connect because they're in the habit of not connecting.
Correct.
So it's like the same as exercise. You turn up, if you haven't been doing it, you're going to suck at it. It's going to hurt and it's not going to be enjoyable. You're not meant to enjoy it. A couple of weeks in, you start to get euphoria, the good feelings. Same thing with the at-home kitchen table. You put a couple of weeks of effort in, that whole dynamic has changed.
Couldn't agree with you more. And also to the point where like habits are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
They are. And if you work at a very consistent effort and you don't go to sleep for 3 or 4 weeks and you sleep 3 hours, eventually it's a habit and it's not that hard. Early days, it's hard to do. If I'm not saying it's healthy.
Yep.
But a lot of people go, oh, how does Elon Musk do 120-hour weeks? Because mm-hmm. he worked his way up to that.
Yeah.
You know, and he's obviously driven. He wants to do whatever it is. What he wants to.
Got some lofty goals.
Yeah, it's got crazy goals. But he's addicted to working at a level that's extremely craziness to a lot of people. But to him, it's not crazy.
Mm.
That's just his life. He sacrifices things that people think, why would you not just hang out with family or do this?
Mm.
That's his life. He's addicted to that.
Yeah, and that's important with finding your model. Like,
it's like
you can't look upon someone else. Like, you have a model of like, all right, I want to work 40 hours a week and spend all evenings with my family. Great. Someone else might not want that, but still raise kids, and they were raised as that, and that comes back to our conversation around the parenting that. But they still getting quality moments with their kids, and that's just their dynamic. Like.
Good point that you make in the sense is, what is it you want?
What do you want?
What do you want your life to? What turns you on? Like, what fires you up? What does it look like to be extremely happy?
Yeah.
And I mean, if you ever write down a list that makes you happy, and you've got a little bit of ambition into it, good luck doing it.
Yeah.
Because not easy.
No.
So if you were to say, okay, I want to influence 100 people for the better. Yep. I want to change 1,000 people's lives this year.
Yeah.
I want to be fit. I want to have a body fat percentage of 10, 12%,
yep.
6%, whatever that might be. Mm. I want to have a great relationship.
Mm.
I want to have a great relationship with my kids, my family, my friends. Write your list down.
Mm.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go achieve that list.
Yeah.
And if you think it just happens without developing the right habits and rituals to be able to execute on that happiness list,
yep.
you can't then say, oh, I want to be happy. Well, are you doing the work to live your best life?
And
start with the list.
Yeah, and reverse engineer.
And even if you aim for the stars, like and you don't get there, you know, that what's the saying there? There's a saying around that. But don't aim for like there and get there. Like, aim for up here.
Yeah.
And in if terms you miss of your happiness.
Yep.
Because if you don't get there, that's fine. You're still gonna be extremely happy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But just don't.
Yeah, and the importance of that list and the goals is that if you don't identify things that you seek after, they may come into your life, and because you haven't pre-identified them, it won't bring you any fulfillment and happiness.
Yeah,
they could just, like, people would stumble into your life, and if you did that without intention, it's going to lead to you not appreciating it.
Yep.
Whereas if you lay those goals out and you put in the mental training towards it, when you actually hit those moments, you'll be like, that moment you're talking about with the air locker videos and the location, because you put in that thought.
MJ.
Yeah, MJ. Like, and that's interesting too. Like, there's so many like interesting ways to approach that and connect it and the levels above it. But yeah, I think that's awesome, man.
I think air locker as by definition, it could be someone else's job. It could be someone else's business. It could be someone else's hobby. Air locker for me is my opportunity in life to do things that I've always dreamed of,
mm-hmm.
you know. And Kobe Bryant said it perfectly when he said, "When you find something you're good at, do it the best you can."
Yeah,
do it the best you can. And something that people are always looking for in life is something that has a payoff for them.
Yeah,
and something that they're passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to find that, because sometimes you find things you're passionate about, but it has no payoff, has no financial outcome to it. So, you know, I really want to be, I want to be give back to community and mm-hmm. do charity. They're doing all this charity, and then all of a sudden they got no money to feed themselves or house themselves. So, you got to find and I always call it commercial passion. That's what you got to find, and Airlock is that for me, and tied up all in that. In that ball of whatever that is, whatever it will be, is just a country boy that dreams big and kind of feels like this life, like you said, you only get one life. This vehicle only gets one life. Spirit keeps going on, in my opinion. But
yep.
do it the best I can and have fun along the way and the rewards come from the work. You know, the rewards come from just looking back and going, geez, I did that. You know, geez, I put a good effort in there, or I rose to the occasion there, or yep. we all did, we inspired the team to do so. And, you know, that's where the rewards come from, is from the work. And that's all this is. It's a good opportunity for me to kind of sink my teeth into something that gives me so much back. And it's really my selfishness. Like, this podcast for you gives so much back to you, and Airlocker gives so much back to me. So that's my little selfish thing. And, you know, and I think people that invest in the brand, hopefully they get that too, because, you know, obviously as the founder, I want people to get as much out of this as I do, mm. as a member or as a partner. And because it's not numbers, mm. it's more than that, you know. Yeah. It's more than that. It's sounds cliche, doesn't it? And a lot of people say that, but
cliche doesn't make it wrong.
Yeah, it's yeah, and that's what Airlocker is, and that's why I'm so passionate about it, because it serves me and it gives me so much.
Wicked, bro. Well, it was awesome to have you on here today.
Yeah, I
really loved it. So just a quick shout out, if people are looking to franchise or become partners yep. of Airlocker, also people looking to get in shape, where are we finding you?
We're on Instagram at Airlocker Training.
Yep.
LinkedIn at Airlocker Training, Facebook Airlocker Training.
Yep.
And website, airlockertraining.com.
Easy.
That's
all
it.
Right. So appreciate it. Thanks for
today. Thank you very much, Brennan. Cheers.
And that's the end of the episode. I hope you thoroughly enjoyed it. I know I did. Roman's a great guy, and I'm looking forward to seeing where that business goes in the future. As always, you can go to brendanosborne.com. That's Brendon, Osborne with no U.com, to see more about every one of our guests. And you can also jump on Instagram with the same name and see all the new episodes that are released and little snippets from all of our guests.
Thanks for joining us on the Brendan Osborne podcast.